I had a friend who was in New York City for a while, worked with me for a while. His name was Tom Beeler. But Tom had a lot of little sayings and anecdotes. One of the things that he said kind of hit home to me. And you've probably heard something similar. But he said, everyone can be divided into one of two categories. Those who are primarily givers and those who are primarily takers. So I want us to talk about this morning. This is not going to be as heavy duty a lesson as the one we had during the Bible class time, but I think it's an important one. So I hope you can help us. Givers or takers, which are we? Now, we'll define what we're talking about a little bit because there are different ways you can look at those words. Givers are those who generally realize that happiness comes from giving to others, serving others. There's a great joy that comes when they can give something and see the joy that they give to others. We're not talking just money. We're not just talking gifts. We're talking time. Sometimes that's the hardest thing, isn't it, to give? But we're talking about energy, and we're talking about attention. Now, on the other hand, what about takers? Well, takers dedicate their lives to finding ways to gain mean little advantages over other people. And they're just thrilled if they can take something from other people. You know, why are there so many people that love the lottery? They're takers. They think maybe I can just get a little money and be a millionaire out of this. Okay, I'm not here to give a lesson on that. It's the attitudes we have to work about on that. They're constantly talking about money. They're talking about themselves. They're wanting to gain advantages over others. Now, they may give gifts on occasions, but if they give gifts, what's the motive behind it? Usually, if I give him something, maybe I get something back in return. Or they gave us something, so we got to give them something. That's the way takers are. We're just talking about a general concept of what makes people happy, giving or taking. And there may be some percentages involved. No human being, with exception of one who's lived on the face of the earth, is 100% giver. The rest of us all have to fight that little bit of taker that sometimes tries to find its way into our lives. And even those who are generally takers can sometimes maybe be blessed with a few seconds of a desire to give to others. And those who are primarily givers can sometimes find themselves worrying too much about themselves. But generally speaking, and I think this is true, there are no 50-50s. Everyone is either primarily a giver or primarily a taker. Oh, what does God want us to be? You already know the answer. God wants us to be givers, and there's all kinds of passages that we could put up here. And Proverbs talks a lot about givers and takers. Proverbs 11:25, the generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. And the passage that we read earlier, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Where is that found in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? Jesus said that. It's not found there. It's found in Acts. We have oral tradition that became written tradition there in Acts chapter 20 and verse 35. A classic text, Jesus, in Luke chapter 6 and verse 38. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put back into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. Be a giver. You'll receive. Now, don't take this as the way I've heard some unscrupulous preachers say. Give my ministry. It used to be $100. I think they want $1,000 or more now. Give me $100 and you'll get $700. No, we're talking about spiritual blessings. If you give to others, you'll receive back spiritually. 1 Timothy chapter 6, 18. It's not sinful to be rich. Paul's directing himself to the rich here, but what should they be willing to do? Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. Okay, if you're blessed with some money, you better be a giver. is what he's saying here. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 16. Do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. And so we have this and a bunch of other texts which are direct commands that we be givers and not takers. And really, every command in the Bible and every example in the Bible which promotes love is teaching that we should be givers. If you want to talk about givers, how are givers? Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're not going to read it, but you know the list of 15 qualities of love there in verses 4 through 7. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy and boast. That's givers. Those words describe givers. And if those words don't describe us, it's probably because we're not givers as we should be. God wants you to be a giver. Well, let's do this. Let's look at some Bible examples. If I were to ask you, I think we did something like this last night, but if I were to ask you to give me a list of five givers in the Bible, who would be some people that you would think of? I'm going to throw up some examples of mine. Feel free to give me some examples you have that I'll probably forget in my own list. Who are some givers in the Bible? Abraham. And I think perhaps if you're agreeing with me, there's one occasion in particular where we see this. When the time came to divide up the land for the different flocks, Abraham gave first choice to his nephew Lot. And we see that in other ways, that he was a giver. I think of Boaz, and he was quick to give to these poverty-stricken ladies who he found in his midst, made special arrangements so that they could have what they needed. And you know what Boaz got out of that for being a good giver? He found a great wife. Young men, I won't look over there, I have to embarrass them. But if you want a great wife, what do you need to do? You need to be a giver, generous. And if you are a giver and generous with others, generally that's the type of young lady that you will be attracting. The Good Samaritan. There's a good example, isn't it? Here's an injured man. Who are the takers in that story? The priest and the Levite who went by and don't want to get involved. That's a taker attitude. Don't want to get involved. But the Good Samaritan was willing to stop, probably at a risk to himself. He was willing to give money out of, not from many charity cases, of his own money to help that man. There's a good example of a giver. Onesiphorus. Now, he may not be as famous as some of the others. When Paul was in jail, having been abandoned by so many others, Onesiphorus came and sought him out diligently. Wasn't seeking him out diligently in the Hilton Hotel. He was seeking him out diligently on death row. And Paul was greatly appreciative of that. We don't know any more about Onesiphorus than that, but that's enough to know that he was a giver. He had learned from his Lord Jesus Christ. There's the ultimate example. I almost hate to put him on the screen with the others because he's so much above them, not in the same category. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life. There's the giver. The Good Shepherd gives his life for the sheep. And really in the New Testament, all the givers you see have been influenced by Jesus. Some were takers transformed into givers by the example of Jesus Christ. You probably know what our next exercise is going to be. There are some givers, and I'm sure you can think of more. Who are some takers? Some takers in the Bible. Who would you put on your list of takers? The first one may surprise you a little bit because, you know, he has some honor. I think Jacob was a taker, especially in the beginning of his life. He was just a little take advantage fellow. Especially we see this when it came to the birthright. It's the great privilege that the older son would have, and by trickery, he was able to obtain that for himself. And the special blessing that was to go to the older son. and his mother participated in this one. He tricked his father into receiving that, taking what wasn't his. Well, somebody might ask, isn't Jacob one of the patriarchs who has some things good to say about him? I think in the life of Jacob, you could see a progression from just a nasty taker. And maybe we'd like to hope that by the end of his life that he had learned to become somewhat of a giver. But it wasn't easy. Now, this may be a little bit direct, but I'm not thinking of anybody in particular. It's probably there's some takers right here, right now. You don't recognize that you're a taker. Jacob, if you ask Jacob, are you a taker? No. But there's probably some takers here who may have some good qualities in some areas. But the bottom line is, these takers are out to receive, to take advantage. Don't you be the one. And if you find yourself, and we all find ourselves in this area in some ways, let's make some changes in our lives. What are some other takers? There's you one. Absalom. And if you know your Bible a little bit, you'll know that he's the one who threw flattery. Oh, my dad's not taking care of you. If I were king, I would take care of you. And he won the hearts of Israel. For the good of Israel? No, for his own personal good. And he eventually chased his father out of Jerusalem until he was killed in a horrible way. But he's a good example of a taker. The next one I'm going to put up is Pear. I think the worst one is the woman involved, and you may already know who I'm thinking of. I think I heard a whisper of the right one. Ahab and Jezebel. And maybe you're thinking of that particular occasion where this takerism, that's not a word, don't look it up in the dictionary, but you know what I'm talking about, where this takerism came to the front. When here's a poor man, Naboth, who has a nice vineyard, unfortunately close to the palace. It was coveted by Ahab, who just sat and whined about it. And Jezebel said, we can do something about that. Got some false witnesses, killed poor Naboth, and they were able to take control of that vineyard. They were takers. Gehazi, who is this? You probably know if you've read the Bible a little bit. This is Naaman's servant. And the story goes, and I'll just tell it briefly, the general Naaman came down to be healed. His servant girl told him about a prophet in Israel. And so Gehazi was a servant, and the prophet didn't take any money from Naaman, who was so thrilled to be healed, but Gehazi went out after him, secretly trying to get some of that money that he'd seen offered, the changes of clothing and so forth. Naaman's leprosy stuck with him. He was a taker. In the New Testament, who are some takers that you can think of? There's you one. The rich young ruler. Now, he might have seemed like a good fella. Rich. He said, I followed all these commandments. But the bottom line is he did not want to give as Jesus told him to give. And he went away sorrowfully. Diotrephes, according to John, he wanted to have the preeminence in the church. And he gave grief to John and to others who are trying to follow the Lord. Who is the worst taker of them all? I think you probably knew I was coming to that. Satan is the worst. He wants to take souls that should belong to God away from God. Satan wants to take your soul so that you will not have God and you will not have the blessing that God gives. So we could make some long list here. Good project for a Bible class sometime. A list of givers and takers in the Bible. Now I want us to get around to some applications. What are some problems caused by takers? Now we'll focus first of all on the home and the family. Well, there are husbands who are takers. Now ladies, don't get too excited here because you know what's coming after we talk about husbands. So don't, listen there. You're getting yours coming in a minute. But many times husbands are takers. Now, when you think of husbands and wives, if they are both givers, and I've seen some examples in this congregation, if they're both givers, how's that marriage going to be? It's going to be so beautiful. It's going to bless so many people around. Two givers, Mary. Blessings flow forth. If both of them are takers. Talk about a cat and a dog fight. Each one trying to take advantage of the other, gain mean little advantages, it's going to be a disaster. Won't last. Now, the challenge comes when one is a giver and one is a taker. It's not going to be easy. What we hope is that the giver's influence will win out eventually, and they can have a good marriage, but there's going to be some tough goes. And I've seen some marriages that go that way. But there are always problems caused when one or both in a marriage are takers. They're your husbands. They want it their way. The old caricature, you have a macho husband, comes in from work, bring me my slippers, I'm in charge. I've seen this more. The wife is like, she needs to spend $10 something on something. What are you blowing all that money for? You think money grows on trees around here? Then he needs to spend $500. You say $500 on golf clubs. I think they're more expensive than that now. But he wants to spend $500 on golf clubs. I need that for relaxation. You know, I'm so stressed at work. I need that. She can't spend anything, or she's blowing money. He can spend all he wants. I knew one taker husband. This is a long time ago. But he loved Butterfingers and Baby Ruth. Those are kind of old people's candy bars, I think. But he didn't want his family to have access to all of that. So he had little places in the house where we'd hide Butterfingers and Baby Ruth. And then when he wanted his money, he'd go in there and get him a Butterfinger. And he didn't have to share it with anyone. Taker husbands. Okay, I told the wives not to get too excited. Because many wives are takers. Somebody says, don't say I'm talking about you. I don't know about what's going on in your house. But we've seen them. Wives who have to have the most expensive clothing, the brand clothing, or if not, they'll powder the best furniture. They feel like they're in competition with everyone else for luxuries in their home and their clothing and so forth. And they're the ones that say, look at this miserable husband I have. I could have had him, and he's a doctor, and look at him now. That's a taker wife, if you ever hear anything like that. I'm thinking right now of a taker wife, and they were, you know, it was not easy economically, but we came into a treasure trove of really good used clothing. It was good. And so we're all excited. Man, look here, what we got here. And somebody said, don't you want some? This is good stuff. It's used. I don't want it. But this looks as good as anything you would get at the highfalutin store or Saks Fifth Avenue. It's used. Nobody will know it's used. I will know that it's used. That's a taker type of woman. And we could talk about that. She's constantly complaining about her husband because she's not getting what she wants to get. What's the solution? The solution is to change our attitude. Husbands need to learn to love their wives as Christ loved the church. It takes some work, but we work on it. We look at Jesus and we see how Christ loved the church and we try to learn to be that way. And wives need to learn to love their husbands. Get back to Titus chapter 2 that we've mentioned earlier. In other words, we just have to learn to be givers. And I've known some cases where some pretty bad takers decided they were going to try to follow Jesus more, trying to imitate him more, and they've kind of come back and become more like Jesus. And really, isn't that true of all of us? If we're by ourselves, we all pretty much turn quickly to takers. I'm getting off my notes here. You can get in trouble. But little babies are by nature takers. Give me, give me. But we teach them the joy of giving. I think that's one of my next points. I can get that in a little more. Husbands, wives, takers. Parents, takers. They see their children as a way to gain glory for themselves. Now, I'm not talking about anybody here. I don't know you, okay? But I've seen this in athletics. Here's a child. His father did not really excel much in sports. But he wants his children, his little boy, to excel in sports. And there they are, sergeant-like. They think they're Vince Lombardi with all these little second and third graders running out of the field of death. Go, 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 run, run, run. This boy of mine, he's going to be a player one of these days. Is that what the child needs? And maybe it's even a child who has a more sensitive disposition, who's not inclined to that. He'd rather play the trumpet or even the violin. Dad's not going to accept that. He's got to run up and down the field. Why? Is that for the boy's good? Or is it for dad's pride? We've seen it. Most of us have seen it. Parents can be takers. I want to be careful with this, but I wonder, JonBenet Ramsey, I was talking about that earlier with Tony. Why would you want your little girl, 6 or 7 years old, to dress sexy and prance around in front of others? Is that good for the little girl? It's for mama. It's for mama. Parents, we need to be careful not to be takers, not to look upon our children as means of self-glorification, but as little treasures that God has given us, that we need to form in the image of Christ, not for our own good, but for their good. Sometimes the words of parents reveal this taker attitude. There was a woman in Kentucky. She'll never know I'm talking about her. But anyway, she confessed to me this, but she was having some problems, and it was getting worse. And she said she went to get counseling, and the counselor pointed this out to her, that she was so ashamed of her children. And she would say, "This, look at what this child is doing to me." And then when she would rebuke the child, "You are making me ashamed. After what you've done, I don't want to even show my face in your school. You have humiliated me in every way." Now, do you see a magic word that pops up in that type of rebuke? Me. Look what you've done to me. You've humiliated me. You've embarrassed me. That's taker parent talk, okay? Now, we need to correct our children, but on what basis? You're hurting yourself. This is not a good way for you to go. This is not going to take you in a good direction. I love you. I want you to grow up and learn to appreciate Christ, the life he gives. That's why I'm going to have to punish you. And our children know the difference. Our children know if we're punishing them because we love them or if we're punishing them because we're angry at them because they have humiliated us. Parents, let's not be takers. Children. Now, you thought you were going to get by scot-free, didn't you? Children can be takers. As we pointed out earlier, when little tiny babies, they can't do anything. They're just going to receive from their parents. But, it's possible. This does not include grandparents. What I'm going to say to grandparents don't count here, okay? But it's possible that as parents, we can just not help them by giving them every toy they want, giving them everything they want. We've all had friends like that growing up. The little boy and I was growing up. He had the motorcycle when he was 13 or 14. I had my little walkie-talkie. It was on the CB. "Can you hear me?" And all of a sudden, blast away. "My daddy gave me a real CB." Okay. Was it a blessing to that boy? He had a miserable life. You just don't do your good children good by giving them everything they ever wanted. She's not little now. She's 40-something. But when she was little, she went to a friend's house and she came back and says, "Daddy, I feel like I've been to Toys R Us." You don't help kids that way. You're teaching them to be takers if you're not careful. Parents, are you raising your kids to be takers? No. Grandparents excluded here. They can do that. How can you raise children to be givers? Praise them when they give. Give them opportunities to give. If there are elderly people in the congregation that are sick, give them a piece of paper. Say, "Here's some crayons. Send them a card. Let's send them a card." Go up and hug them. I almost think I'm preaching to the choir here. You all are blessed with wonderful children here. I think we can always do better, so I gotta keep on with this point. But may God continue to bless you all as you raise these children as you have here. When you visit, take your little kids to the nursing home. Have you ever noticed? You know, they take dogs to the nursing home to try to help the people feel better. Take your little kids to the nursing home. Teach them to be concerned about the elderly, to go up and give them a hug, to talk to them. Take them to visit the sick people with you. And I hope you're going. If you're a giver, you're going to be trying to find some time to do this. But take your kids with you when you're serving the Lord. The greatest gift we can give our children is not the latest, I have no idea what I'm talking about, Nintendo or whatever it is. That's not the greatest gift you can give. I have no idea what's the modern in video game. The greatest gift you can give them is to teach them to be givers. Show them that you're a giver. Teach them to be a giver. Teach them to work. This is an additional point. I don't want to go too long here, but there was a survey of supposedly, and I guess in many ways, of successful teenagers. And what's the common denominator here with these successful teachers who can excel in academics and in social aspects and so forth? And there's really no one thing you could put your finger on. There are all kinds of different parenting styles. They had one thing in common. And you already know what it is because of what I'm talking about. They were taught to work and do chores around the house from the time they were little. That was the one thing that stood out. So make your kids make up the bed. You have to stand over them with a stick sometime. Make it up. Clean up. But they will learn. And praise them that you're happy when they do it. Thank you for helping Dad. Thank you for helping Mom. These are some things that help us. I'm not going to get into much detail. Let's be givers, and in the home, let's be givers. That's the point. I'm going to point out friends as well briefly. You know, you have giver and taker friends. Don't put any names in your mind by it right now. But if you stop and think, they're giver and taker friends. When can you know that your friends may be a taker, and you may need to back off a little bit? Possessiveness. You ever have friends who see you as a means where they can receive some kind of honor or something like that? I see it at our little camp. You have maybe a popular little girl, and you see all the other little girls want to kind of follow along behind. You're my best friend. And even in adults, I've seen this. When anyone says, you're my best friend, that's kind of a way of marking territory, isn't it? In other words, don't you go off and talk with anybody else. I am your best friend. That's possessiveness. That's a toxic type of friendship. That's taker type of friendship. If we have that type of friendship, if we're takers in friendship, we want others to be willing for us to talk about our problems with them. And that's good if they do. But then if they want to talk about their problems with us, we don't have time. If you ever tried to talk about a problem, you say, sometimes it's legitimate. Sometimes we do have another appointment or whatever. But in such a case, we need to say, I really want to help. I really want to listen right now. I've got something, but could I call you later? Givers find time to talk to their friends about their problems. Takers, too busy for your problem. Now, I want you to take time with mine. And there are all kinds of other things we could go through here. We don't want to be taker friends. Don't be a taker friend. Well, let's talk briefly about problems caused by takers in the local church. I was talking about this briefly with someone. I said, I don't see many takers here. Now, I don't know the congregation very well. And somebody said, I don't think there really are any takers. So maybe I'm preaching to the choir here. But if there are not any now, they will come. And so we've got to know how to help. Attitudes about attendance. Takers will complain, I'm not getting anything out of that service. The preacher's boring. I'm not talking about anybody here saying that. The preacher's boring. He goes too long. He goes too short. He's not friendly enough. He's too negative. He's too positive. Have you ever heard this? I feel worse after services than I did before. And how do takers look at worship services? It's a place to take, to be amused, to receive from others. Now, we want to receive teaching. We want to receive. But if we go in to services saying, what can I get out of this? Then we're not going to get anything out of it. And thus you see the whining and complaining that I just mentioned. Let's not be takers when it comes to attendance. What's the real reason for attending? To receive? You know the passage. Hebrews chapter 10, 24 and 25. Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. What are we here to do? Stir up love and good works. That's why we don't want to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. How can I give? The taker says it didn't get nothing out of that. The giver says, how can I give more? I want to shake the hand of that young Christian. I want to talk with those little kids. If mom and dad lets me, maybe I'll sneak a little candy to them. I want to be there to give, to do what I can. I want to pray for that sister who's sick. I want to talk with other brethren about how we might can help someone who's going through trouble. Taker says, didn't get nothing out of that. The giver says, how can I give more? The attitudes towards service. The takers are the whiners. You didn't call me. You didn't visit me. You didn't do this, that, or the other. The thought that they should do that for others is just hard for them to grasp. There was a lady, this is back when, and there's still some of us who send out birthday cards, and it's not done very much. Birthday cards, get well cards. But this goes back away when that was more common. A lady I remember came out after services. This would be in the 1970s. You didn't send me a card for my birthday. And I thought, well, you didn't send me a card for my birthday. And that kind of shook her up. The thought that maybe she would send me a card for my birthday had never crossed her mind. You know, I was the young preacher there. I should be the one sending out the cards. Tried to remember to send her one for the next birthday. But you see what I'm saying. The takers in the congregation, the thought that maybe they should be giving or they should be calling, it just doesn't cross their mind. We hope that they'll learn. What about when there's controversy? That's where you can really see the givers and the takers. And there are different levels of spiritual growth. Therefore, we're not going to always see everything in an identical way. The taker, when there's controversy, his main concern is that he looks smart. Ooh, look at how he, like you see on the YouTube, what's the guy? Jordan Peterson destroys the leftist, or what's some of the others? Shapiro kills the others, you know, and that's the way sometimes we think. In a controversy, that's what we want to do. Gardner Hall blasts away at error. That's taker. That's taker. I'm not trying to cast aspersions on some of these politicians. They're wanting more ratings, and I guess that's the way you get them. But among Christ people, that's not our purpose, to destroy, to come out looking like a rose when there's controversy. If that's the way we are, we're going to be in trouble. Takers never apologize in controversy. They're always right. Givers only have two motives. First of all, they want to know God's will. They want to make sure that they're interpreting the scriptures correctly. And if they're not sure, they'll ask. Let's see if we can get the scripture and apply it correctly to our lives. And then when they're confident that they understand the scriptures, then they want to lovingly help others see the truth that they've come to see. Here's a description of a giver in controversy. The wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Look at that description. Those are the last words you would ever think of to describe some people in controversy. Peaceable? Gentle? No, not him. But let's make sure that someone doesn't say that about us. Willing to yield, full of mercy? No. Those words do describe a giver when there's controversy. Not, they're standing for truth. They're doing what's right, but they're doing so with the fruit of the Spirit. They don't shy away from controversy, but they make sure that when they're involved in it, that they reflect this. Only as a last resort do you get out those electrical shock defibrillators to try to revive the patient. I'm thinking again of Matthew chapter 23. That's a last resort. generally speaking, this is going to describe our controversy. Well, what we're talking about is the very essence of following Jesus. Love, giving, and to be Christ-like is to root out every trace of takerism we can in our lives. We don't want to be 80% givers, 90% givers. We want to be like Christ. We'll never attain that in this life. That's our goal. Quickly, how to root it out. Not worry so much about ourselves. That's hard. That's hard. But that's the way it is with Jesus. Look at the example of givers. You've got plenty of them here. Look at them. What's their secret? How did they learn to be givers? And if you know that they spend some time going to hospitals or visit sick, I'd like to go with you. Learn from them. Make a list of people you can help. There's some people that only you know. What can you do to help them? You can pray for them. Maybe you can call them, write them notes. Maybe you can babysit for some of these young parents. Even if they got 6 or 7 kids, take it on a little bit. Find somebody. Maybe you may need some help if they have a lot of kids. But that's a great way that you can be a giver. Visit those sick, those shut-ins and so forth. Imitate Jesus. Well, a final group of words to some takers. And I don't want to be offensive. But I'll be frank with you. And I think if you know me, you know I'm saying this in a loving way. If you haven't yet obeyed the Lord, what does the comedian say? You might be a taker. You might be a taker. Do we only want to receive God's blessings? Receive the rain? I think they thank God more for it here than they do in the East. Do you thank God for the rain? I remember hearing some prayers for that. For your work? For your blessings? I don't think you could have chosen a better song, Joshua, to sing before services. What did Jesus do for us? I gave my life for thee. What hast thou given to me? There's a sense in which all of us are takers. If we're looking at who receives blessings, it's us. We're takers in that sense. But I'm talking about our attitude. Do we just want to receive without giving anything to God in return? What did Jesus say in Matthew 10:25? Whoever desires to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. If we say, no, God, I don't want to give you my life, I just got so many things I want to do, and if I give my life to you, I may be hindered in that. You don't have life. You'll never find life. You'll die without purpose. You'll die without hope. But if you're willing to say, you know, what I want doesn't matter, I'm giving my life to the one who's given so much to me, that's when you find your life. You'll never find it till you do that. You can leave the life of taker. We can all leave the taker that sometimes we allow ourselves to get into. But when we make that sacrifice, we come to receive in ways that we can never imagine.